You're listening to Hottery Humble.
Hello there.
Wow.
Welcome, welcome to episode 11 of the Hard to Be Humble podcast. I am the humblest man on earth, Tommy Stickle, and I've got a special message from one of our dear old friends to kick off the show.
Ready? Let's go. You guys act like it's... Pick it up a little bit, okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Okay? Dang, you guys, all right? If not, I'm not talking. Let's get rolling, okay?
So what is left to say after the game on Saturday? Not a lot. Things are just bad. It's a bad time to be a Razorback football fan. No fun at all. But as always, we're in this together, guys. And there's nowhere left but up, as they say. The eternal optimist I am, there's nowhere left but up. So, unless you were living under a rock and weren't paying any attention at all to football this past weekend, the Arkansas Razorbacks went into Lexington, Kentucky and lost a close game, 24-20, with a fourth-string wide receiver as their starting quarterback. Just to make it even worse, this quarterback, Lynn Bowden, was named as an SEC Offensive Player of the Week already by a few outlets, or Co-Offensive Player of the Week. So, as is an ongoing joke, again, we can make any quarterback have his career night. And I want to play a voicemail that one of our listeners sent in to our Hard to Be Humble phone number, as you can do too, at 615-392-0107 with any of your thoughts, concerns, anything you have. I always love getting these voicemails. So I want to play a voicemail of one of our listeners. It's Andy from Memphis. We've heard from him before. And of course, he called what would happen this weekend.
Hey, Tommy, this is Andy from Memphis. Glad to hear you going to Lexington this Saturday. Wish I could go. It's one of the few stadiums I haven't been to. Piggyback on your buddy Chad's idea about doing that hall call, you better do it. But one thing you better not do, and that's howl that woo. I'm sick and tired of these howl calls I hear all the time, and you best not be sticking to it, or that's what has to be done. No howling, only wooing. All right, man. And I hope Hogs win, but I don't have that much hope this week against Kentucky, because everybody seems to think Kentucky is, you know, going to be an easy win. We have a losing record against Kentucky all the time. The only game we've won in Lexington was a 7-overtime game with Matt Jones. I have a feeling Kentucky's going to beat us by 3 touchdowns. Their O-line is very, very good. Doesn't matter what they got at quarterback, because as you know, we make every quarterback look like a Heisman winner. I wish I could be more positive about the Hogs, but until they win games, I'm just not going to be it. Coming close with no cigar, moral victory bull. Ain't no good for me. Wins. All right, man. Talk to you later. Bye.
So I think Andy made some excellent points. Of course, Kentucky didn't beat us by 3 touchdowns, but I think he makes a great point that basically our defense can make just about any quarterback look like a Heisman contender just about any time. It just feels that way as a Hog fan. And Andy, to kind of address the point you made about calling the Hogs. So I'm ashamed to report that at the time I got to the game, I really had zero time to even have a circumstance where it made sense to even try to call the Hogs. Basically, I got there. I walked, you know, about a mile to the stadium, met up with a couple of my friends there, and we basically walked straight into the game. I thought I would get there early enough to kind of go to a restaurant or be around some other people. I really had no time to even start a hog call. Literally, the only place I could have done it was where we were sitting in the stadium, and there were absolutely zero Razorback fans around us. Well, I take that back. There was one guy that had a Razorback baseball hat on that was a little bit ahead of us, but it was very few and far between for the Razorback fans. Now, the visitor section was packed, and you had a few Razorback fans dotting here and there, but I'm ashamed and sorry to report that I did not do Chad's challenge. I'm a failure, and I apologize to Chad and to the world for not upholding my end of the deal. But good news to address, I do not howl when I call the hogs. No way. That ain't no way. I agree with you. No howling when you call on the hogs. It doesn't sound like that. So I'm going to get into a little bit of what my game day experience was like driving up to Lexington. So first off, the reason I had so little time was I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I just wasn't thinking. I didn't even think to consider, is Lexington, Kentucky in Eastern time zone? I just didn't think it. I knew it was relatively north of where I live. It's northeast for sure. But anyway, so I definitely lost an hour driving there and did not anticipate that. So I was just kind of off my game with that and showed up straight to the arena. Didn't have time to really have fun or see the city or do much else besides pretty much walk into the game. But just kind of speaking pretty candidly about the experience, you know, it was, the fans there were very nice. I thought they were very pleasant fans. In fact, kind of in almost an awkward way, in the third quarter, some Kentucky fan that actually reminded me a lot of Houston Nutt came up to me and my two buddies and was like, "Hey, I just wanted to check with y'all guys if people were being hospitable to you and if you're having a good time. I just hope you're enjoying your time here in Lexington." And I didn't know if the guy was being like legit and serious or just messing. I had no idea. And I was like, "Yeah, everybody's good." And he walked, like, he was like, "Great, that's what I was hoping to hear." And he walked off. Yeah, go to Lexington. Apparently, they're really nice at football games. Now, I can't speak to Rupp Arena in the basketball atmosphere. I would imagine that's a little bit more hostile at times. But yeah, the football fans were great. Had a couple funny encounters as I was walking to the stadium. You know, you're walking past tons of fans. One guy just randomly saw me, and he looked at me as we were passing by and said, "Y'all should have never fired Houston Nutt." And walked, that was it. I didn't even respond to him. And first off, I wanted to say Houston Nutt was not fired. He resigned, but whatever. And I think a lot of Hog fans would agree with that fan at the moment, but I can't yet. I just can't. I can't go there. Houston Nutt's in the past. I'm sorry. He's in the past for me, but if y'all like him and want him back, whatever. That's your, y'all can have your opinion for sure. Another funny fan encounter that I had was as when we were inside the stadium, we were before the game walking up and down, walking around trying to find, you know, some good places to get some food, whatnot. And there was this random Kentucky fan that's that guy. And pretty much every single Razorback fan he saw, he would get up in their face and say, "Y'all are about to get beat by a wide receiver starting his first game of quarterback," and just walk off. That's what he wanted to tell every Razorback fan. And probably the funniest part of it is that guy literally said something to us three different times because he didn't even care which Razorback fan. He wasn't paying attention to who he was saying it to. We kind of walked back and forth just looking for food, you know. We didn't walk in a perfect circle around it, so we kind of turned back around. Sure enough, that guy was there getting into every Razorback fan saying, "Y'all are about to get beat by a wide receiver quarterback." So, you know, I guess that's to be expected. You know, people are just weird. So he wasn't mean or anything, but whatever. Those are kind of the two most noteworthy fans. And then I also sat beside some fans that were very, very nice. In fact, they were shooting off or throwing out little koozies, you know, as they do in games. And they were blue. And, you know, anytime they give out free stuff in a stadium, everybody freaks out. And the woman next to me goes, "Don't get too excited. They just say Kroger on them." And I kind of respected that. That was kind of nice, especially, you know, with all the Walmart ties we have at Arkansas. You know, the Kroger kind of felt like the competitor there. But I don't know. That just cracked me up that she was like, you don't even want them. They just say Kroger. So aside from the loss in the football game, later on we also got our highest rated football commit decommit. And today we've heard Devon McClure is, I guess, you know, from Coach Morris's mouth, quitting football to focus on his academics and getting a job to support his family, which is admirable. Can't fault a guy too much for that. If you remember, he's not the same age as a lot of players on our team. He's much older. I think he played baseball kind of out of high school, and so he's in his mid-20s, I think, right now. So when you have a family, you got to take care of them, and if football isn't in your future, which he's not even, he does get on the field, but he's by no means a starter or close to that on our team. So it hurts to lose that depth, but you always understand a guy making a decision to support his family. And then, of course, we also get news that another of our players, defensive back, Devin Bush, is entering into the transfer portal. And he was one of our, you know, prized four-star defensive back commitments from this last recruiting cycle. He's a freshman, and that one really hurts. So it's pretty much been nothing but bad news, folks, for the football program. It's just bad. Wish there was something better to report. I wish there was, but there's nothing. There's nothing good right now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm not feeling optimistic about anything. It just is what it is. I did think this was interesting, though. I saw a tweet today by Kyle Deckelbaum. I think he's with KATV. His Twitter account is at KATV Kyle, and I thought this was just kind of interesting. He crunched the numbers and compared Chad Morris and Brett Bielema's first 18 games and looked at, you know, the different records and things. So Brett Bielema's first 18 games, he went 6-12, and he was 0-11 in the SEC. And so far, Chad Morris is 4-14. And also 0-11 in the SEC. So Brett Bielema got him beat by 2 wins. For points per game, Brett Bielema was about 27 points a game. Chad Morris is about 23.5. So Brett Bielema, the guy who was never known for offense and never had any kind of guru or offensive genius tag placed upon him, unlike Morris, had more points per game up to this point in his tenure at Arkansas. Points allowed per game, Brett Bielema had 28.4 points allowed per game. Chad Morris is 32.3 points allowed per game. So far, Brett Bielema, you know, is winning all three of those battles. And then finally, in points differential, Brett Bielema was negative 1.6 points, and Morris is negative 8.8. points differential. So far, I mean, I guess you couldn't say that Chad Morris is just not anywhere near what Brett Bielema is. And they're pretty close ultimately, but still, it's pretty clear that Brett Bielema was better for his first 18 games. And yeah, it's just not feeling good that Chad Morris is going to get this thing turned around at the moment. I know that they have reopened the quarterback battle. It seems like Ben Hicks will be the guy that gets the start against Auburn this week. It's going to be ugly, guys. I also saw another tweet from an account called The Solid Verbal, which is at Solid Verbal. And it looked at all the college football programs and found that 7 weeks in, the following teams have not played a team with a current winning record. Okay? So 7 weeks in, these are the only four teams that have not played a team with a current winning record. Arkansas, Clemson, NC State, and Utah. So, of course, Arkansas sitting at 2-4. Clemson 6-0. NC State is 4-2. And Utah is 5-1. So, clearly, every single team but us is taking advantage of their really weak opening schedule. And, guys, it's just going to get worse from here. We're playing pretty much nothing but highly ranked teams outside of Mississippi State and Western Kentucky here on out. So it's going to get rough. If you ask me, do I think we still could potentially beat Mississippi State and Western Kentucky? Sure, I think we probably can. Will we? Have no idea. Will we beat any other team, including Missouri? Nah, don't think so. But you never know. We'll watch and see. This week, I also did a little bit of research just because I was curious. Sometimes I get this way. I start thinking of a question and can't really find an answer out there because maybe other people have dug into this and done their own research and just didn't find maybe a compelling enough answer to make an article, or maybe I just couldn't find it. But basically what I wanted to see was how many Power 5 schools have gone through two or less win seasons like Arkansas did last year, and what became of those coaches. Have there been any successful coaches in the last 20 years or so that have had success starting out with a two-win season like Chad Morris did last year? So I basically went through all the data since 2000. So I didn't go previous to that. I don't know. You can make a case that there could be a compelling reason to go back further, but I stopped at 2000 and looked through 2000 through 2018. Obviously can't do 2019 because it's currently going on, and looked through every Power 5 program that had a season where they won 0, 1, or 2 games. And then out of those, how many of those were first-year coaches? And so what my research found was that there were 25 different teams who at some point in that roughly 18-year period have won 0, 1, or 2 games. Now, a lot of the teams were kind of repetitive, you know, like the Kentuckys and the Vanderbilts and the Dukes, that, you know, just teams that had really heavy droughts within those years. But some were kind of, you know, first-timers, ones, twos. Arkansas obviously has only done that one time in that stretch. And I just looked for anything compelling. And like I mentioned, there were 25 teams that have done that, which includes two from last year. Obviously, Arkansas was a first-year coach with only two wins. Also, Oregon State had a two-win first-year coach last year as well. And oddly enough, both Arkansas and Oregon State are currently sitting at 2-4. So, feels like a trend. But I guess the jury is still out on those two. We can't really know, hey, maybe they can turn it around. But of the 23 other teams that had a similar season, I can only find five of those 23 that I deem to have had coaches that have had any moderate success off of those seasons in their first year. Only five, and it's even a stretch because two of them are currently going and haven't been fired yet, so there still could be time that they fail. But technically, I feel like I would consider them currently as a success, so I went ahead and included them in that five. So I'm going to list out those five coaches that have won, had a terrible season like that, and actually come to have a decent thing. But let me tell you, there's not a single good coach on this list. Not a one. I think it can easily be said that any coach that wins less than three games their first year is not a good coach. It's just not, it just, the statistics don't prove it. They're all bad, or they just seem bad. They're not great. You might could say some are average. And basically, that was one of the things I saw, was that the coaches that kind of were average and worked their way out of a 2-10 record to, by the end of their tenure, actually have over 50% win percentages, that's a success. It's hard to dig out of a 2-10 season. And, you know, about five have been able to do it. So let's get into those. We'll start with the earliest. So in 2001, Kentucky hired a guy named Guy Morris. Some of y'all might remember him. His first year, he won one game. Second year, he won seven games. That's good. Got a bowl game. And then he left. So I consider that a success. You know, who's to say if he stayed longer, it might have gone south again. Kentucky obviously did go south later on. So maybe he just got out when the timing was right. But hey, I'll consider him a success. 2002, Kansas hired Mark Mangino, who's probably one of the biggest success stories, period, on this list. His first year, he won two games. Second year, won six, got to a bowl game. And his tenure was from 2002 to 2009 when he resigned. And overall, he was 50-48 while he was coach. So that's a successful tenure at a pretty bad football school in Kansas. Next up, long gap from 2002 up until 2013 when Kentucky hired Mark Stoops. I consider him a success. His first year, he won 2 games. Second year, won 5. And he is his second year of that 5 wins is actually the lowest of what I would consider, quote, successful. But obviously, Mark Stoops is still there. And I believe that his win against Arkansas put him right at 500 wins. So, hey, what a success Mark Stoops is. But ultimately, I do think he's a success. I think he got hired the same year that Brett Bielema did. And they're probably similar type of coaches, to be honest. They're kind of that average type. I don't think they're great coaches, but I'm still going to consider it a success. Next up, Virginia in 2016. And this is where we're getting into some of our newer coaches and active coaches, other than Mark Stoops. So in 2016, Virginia hired Bronco Mendenhall. His first year, he won 2 games. Second year, won 6. And he currently, I believe he's sitting at, I might not have included last Saturday's games, but really close to 500. He's about 20 wins, 23 losses, but definitely trending upward in the right direction. And finally, we have in 2017, Baylor hired Matt Rhule. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but his first year, he won 1 game. Second year, won 7, and currently is 6-0. Definitely trending in the right direction. So Matt Rhule, if that's how you pronounce his name, seems to have the best chance of being one of the best successes off of this list, starting low and really turning it around. But who knows? Baylor could tank. I have no clue. So that's it. That is it. And everything else is just bad. Just guys who spend 3 or 4 years with the team and go, 11-37, 4-20, 22-34. 8-32, 5-22, 9-33, 6-42, 6-45. I mean, these coaches just don't turn it around. The statistics show it's so hard and nearly impossible to turn them around. Whenever a football coach is bad and has a bad season, it's clear. He doesn't need more time. And what you typically find is the next guy typically turns it around. And no, it's not because of the bad coach and what he left, the foundation he left. That's baloney. It's because the next coach is a good coach and above average, or at least in a lot of these cases, above a bad coach. So now I know that a lot of people think that Chad Morris needs more time. And who knows? Maybe that is the right move. I certainly am not going to pay for a coach's salary. I don't support that in any way. I guess maybe through ticket sales or something like that. But in no way, shape, or form am I going to pay a buyout for Chad Morris. And I don't know how our finances are sitting. I can imagine that the longer we're terrible, a lot of things will get hit financially. Ticket sales, basically any finances should be negatively impacted by being really bad. And I don't really know if that offsets the buyout or not. Again, I don't know. I looked up the stat of the figure today, and roughly, if we fired Chad Morris at the end of the year, his buyout would be something like $11 million, which is a little less than what Brett Bielema's was on paper. I think it's been determined that they got some lawyers involved with the Brett Bielema buyout, payout type of situation, and either aren't paying him right now or figured out something. I don't know. Maybe some of y'all know the truth behind there and have some insider information, but it seems unlikely that we are truly having to pay Brett Bielema $12 million like his buyout, is reported as, because there's that clause of any money he makes will be counted against what we have to pay him. And also, there's other stipulations, like he has to seek employment, things like that. So Chad Morris has very similar language in his contract. So, should he be fired without cause? If he got a new job and made $1 million, it would all counteract. And anyway, so the likelihood that we'd actually pay Chad Morris $11 million in buyout money it's unlikely, but still, I'm not paying that one way or the other, and I can't make that call. But ultimately, in my mind, it's just about the money at this point, because we all know that Chad Morris is not a good coach. He might be average, but it's extremely doubtful that he's average. It seems like he's just a bad coach. And, you know, sometimes it's about just fit, and maybe he could be a better coach somewhere else, but it's certainly not a fit here at Arkansas. And my estimation is the only reason we retain him would be financially, and it's going to end poorly. We all know it. Whether it's next year we lose to a Mountain West team, next year we lose to a team that's terrible, and when he gets fired right after it, bottom line, we need to be preparing for that because it's inevitable at this point. It seems that the recruiting is unraveling. They're working really hard. No one doubts how hard they work at recruiting, but I think that it's all about to unravel pretty fast. Now, of course, things can always change, but it just does not seem to be trending in that direction. So next up, got a phone call with the old buddy Chad. Y'all enjoy.
Hello, Tommy Stickle.
Hey, Chad, how's it going, man?
I am fantastic.
I'm doing very well. So we're doing it a little differently today, folks, as y'all are listening in your ears to this conversation. Chad and I are looking at each other virtually through computer screens.
I can see you.
So that made me laugh because Chad had to look away and look back at me to say hi. I don't know. It was just funny. Anyway, how are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've got the day off tomorrow. You can't beat that. A little family time. A Silver Dollar City. It's closed on Mondays and Tuesdays in the fall. Didn't know that.
Interesting.
So we're going on Wednesday, and we're going to have a good time. A little day trip.
Silver Dollar City. I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like Gatlinburg over there in Tennessee.
Is there a theme park there, like rides and stuff? Silver Dollar City, and that like theme, like roller coasters and stuff.
There's like roller coasters. They got like a pumpkin fall thing going on.
Cool.
So my kids are excited about that. So that's pretty unhealthy foods, and you know, some good people watching for sure.
Definitely. How far away is it from you?
About 2 hours.
That's not bad. Wow.
Not too bad at all.
Cool, man. Well, that sounds like a blast.
We're looking forward to it.
I'm sick of driving.
Oof.
I didn't even drive that far, but I'm sick of it.
Did you take up our challenge?
Okay, so no, I did not, and I'm ashamed and disappointed.
Was there a point where you thought about it? Like,
no, there really wasn't a single time that I could. So what happened was I got to Lexington an hour later than I was anticipating because I didn't know it was an Eastern time.
Rookie move.
And so I get there, and there's just I basically have time to park my truck, walk a mile to the stadium, try to find, you know, the friends that I'm watching the game with, and then we basically go into the stadium. And there was just if I'd gone to like a restaurant or something like that, I feel like that's where you could do it, but
you didn't feel it was appropriate inside the stadium.
Not really. Where we were sitting, I'm telling you, it was all Kentucky fans around us. There was actually one guy who was wearing black, but he did have an Arkansas baseball hat on, but he didn't have anything else. So he was a fan. He was kind of down there. But I mean, it was no Hog fans around where I was sitting. It was like season ticket holder section.
I didn't see many anywhere really in the stands. I mean, it was a tribute night. I get it, but. Yeah,
Speaking of, you can't really call
the Hogs.
They did something cool that I wanted to tell you about. I thought it was cool. Wasn't expecting it. So I knew Tribute Night was going on, and they gave out these little like 22 towels, like with number 22.
Did
I'm
you
sure
keep
you,
it?
Yes. I don't know where it is, though. It's somewhere around here. But what I thought was cool is, you know, normally they do like moments of silence, like 22 seconds of silence for Jared Lorenzen. Yeah. They did 22 seconds of yelling and going crazy instead. That was pretty cool.
So much better.
Yeah. I think I was impressed by that. So everybody was just freaking out at the beginning of the game. I thought it was cool. Good idea. So
think about if you go, we talked about this earlier, morbid thoughts. I mean, would you rather have, Tommy, if your number was the number 30, would you rather have someone be, an entire group of people be completely silent for 30 seconds, or would you rather have people just freaking out for 30
exactly
seconds?
I would just want to make it awful. I don't know, I immediately went to, I want to do what like really annoying preachers do in the, from the pulpit sometimes, and they're like, I want to take 30 seconds and I want you to shake your neighbor, your brother and sister's hand next to you, and everybody's like, no, I don't want to, no, come on. That's what I would do at mine. just to be annoying.
Turn around and say hi to greet someone you've never met before.
Give them a hug. You're like, no hugs. This is.
I'm typically an outgoing person. I like to meet people, but when that happens, the forced meet, I get miserable.
Exactly. Don't force it.
I look away and I look at my family and I like walk onto somebody I know. It's so terrible.
I just don't. Well, that's what I just stand there, and if no one ever really messes, like they look at me and they're like, that guy. That guy messing with, no, they just ignore me. And I'm like, I'm good.
For the majority of us in the South, I would assume most people listening to this right now know exactly what we're talking about.
So, yeah. What about you? What would you do? Would you have, I feel like you would have the Space Jam song, Hey, You, What You Gonna Do? Hey, playing in the background. Is that Jock? What, or is that Jock Jams? That's not Space Jams.
No, that's Space Jam.
Is that Space Jam? Okay. Gosh, yeah. My mind's getting all the jams confused.
Too many jams. That's a good question. I would like the group to do The Wave for a little while.
Okay.
And I feel like The Wave's underrated. I feel like people get annoyed with The Wave. I get that. And there's even the quarterback. Is it Aaron Rodgers who outlawed The Wave in Lambeau Field? Was it him? It was like some NFL quarterback.
I don't know.
So anyway, The Wave in baseball, it's classic. I love it. I would love the crowd to do The Wave. Just like, it would be a happy time. Do The Wave and then maybe follow it with a hog call.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. Know? And then that's, just lay you down to rest.
Throw me down there. What better way to go for the great, and the crowd's excited about The Wave. If anyone was upset about The Wave, don't do it at all. Like if one person like rolled their eyes, call it off.
Yeah.
Like we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Everyone's
ruined it. You've ruined Chad's departing wishes. He had one wish and you blew it.
Someone was talking local radio here about they were at the Cardinals playoff game and like understanding the unwritten rule about standing at a game. Especially at a baseball game. And it made me think about it because I've been at games too where the person in front of you standing up, but the person in front of them isn't. So they're standing up for no reason. And the guy, I forgot who it was talking about, they're standing on it was a 2-1 pitch. Like, why are you standing on 2-1 pitch? You know, like if it's 2-2 or full count. Yeah, I get it. But I think the rules go both ways because it's like, don't just stand just to stand. Don't be that guy, because then everyone has to stand to be able to see. But at the same time, don't be complaining when it's a big, you know, it's like a big moment in the game and you're standing up and don't yell, because I've been yelled at.
Yes.
Like, I remember A&M Arkansas basketball. Mm-hmm. It went to overtime. Overtime's not a long period, so we're standing up.
Yeah.
Everyone's standing
completely
up.
Completely acceptable.
Somebody behind me told me to sit down.
Oh.
It's like 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, whatever. You got to stand up in overtime, especially at home.
Yeah, I'll be honest. In the Kentucky football game this weekend, me and my two friends, we basically were standing the whole time. We didn't sit. There were people standing in front of us, but still, we would have stood. And there were people there were Kentucky fans just sitting behind me, and I'm like, whatever. It's your call. You can choose to sit or stand. I'm sorry. I'm enjoying the game. The way I want to enjoy it. So,
but I know, a little different, though.
I get it, but I don't really know where I stand on that. Because I don't know. That's a tough one for me. I definitely see both sides, but ultimately, I would never be the guy that would go sit down to a guy in front of me. You know,
you would just stand up.
Yeah, I would stand up too.
Football's different. You're a little more engaged in a football game.
But if you know, if it's an old man or like an old woman or somebody that's too unable to stand, of course I would make, you know, accommodation so that they could see and would sit down, and would probably encourage other people to as well. But, you know, if they're like of average age and can stand up with me, yeah, stand up, you lazy bum.
Does it matter if it's baseball or football, basketball? Baseball. Feel I'm a stander. You can stand during an entire baseball game. That's like impossible.
Yeah, baseball, you sit a lot in baseball. There are moments you stand up, but, you know, in a playoff game, it's pretty intense. That's a tough one. I would say that's a case-by-case basis. You can't make a judgment call.
There's no general rules out there, you're saying.
No, like student section, yeah, stand up all the whole time.
Yeah,
you know, your student section. It's a case-by-case basis. That's what I would say. I can either's fine with me. I'll adapt.
It's a good way to be. I feel like a lot of people don't like to adapt, though.
No, they want it their way.
Just be a normal, nice person out there.
Or you can do what Chad has done in the past when Arkansas played Texas A&M in football, in Jerry World, and put your hands in front of the A&M fan in front of us's eyes and just mess with them constantly the whole game. And somehow make that person be the most gentle, kind soul ever, and not for some reason turn around and punch you in the face.
Oh, I deserved it. I deserved it that day.
That was a miserable day.
So much bigger than me.
Yeah.
I don't know why that didn't happen.
So to give more context here, it was me, Chad, and another friend. So we had three guys, and there were three guys, A&M fans, sitting in front of us, and Chad was having a good day. You know, he was feeling it. And I mean, he was just messing with these A&M guys in front of us. And I honestly thought they were like he would poke them in the head. And
that chant came on like, "You suck." And I was like pointing at him and I hit him.
You hit him. Yeah. And I don't know how they had the love of God. They had the love of Christ in them. I really think that.
Seriously.
And they didn't start a fight. Had they been, you know, your prototypical jock fan, we would have been in trouble.
One punch, I would have been out.
You probably would have just like collapsed before it even got there, because you'd be like, "This isn't worth it," you know, just play dead.
So we both kind of missed on our commitments from last week.
I know. It's
you obviously
okay.
Didn't call the Hogs.
No, it failed.
Slightly disappointed, but I get it. And I didn't go to the hockey game. I'm very disappointed. We had family in town, and we weren't able to get away. We had some other things, and it lasted a little bit longer than we thought. So I was very disappointed. I missed. Saw that they won both games against rival Missouri State.
Yeah.
Still undefeated.
Still undefeated. And they won 7-1 both nights, or 8-1, something like that. They like won the same score.
So I'm disappointed in myself. I still have an opportunity. I can still make it out there.
Yeah, you got plenty of other opportunities. Let's look when their next game is. All right. Yep, 7-1, 7-1. Okay, the next game, Michigan. Let's see, at Michigan. Next Saturday at Michigan, and then they play at Oakland, which is another Michigan. They play four Michigan games. Michigan, Oakland, Grand Valley State on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
You going back? Are you going back for the conference or whatever conference it is, tournament that's going to be in Nashville? Are you going to go watch it?
Oh yeah, I'll certainly be at it. And I think it was their last season as well, just unbeknownst to me. And I think that one of the teams like won some kind of conference, something or other. I saw people celebrating. I was like, "That's where I was. That's the Ford Ice Center." So, yeah, I'll be back. Yes, for sure.
Nice.
And I think that they'll probably be back in Nashville more. I think they're going to be at the new Bellevue Ford Ice Center.
Oh, yeah. When does that open up?
It just did, like last weekend or something. So everybody's freaking out. Every hockey team is, because there's so few places to play. It's like, "Oh, there's ice. Yes, we'll play." So it's like already booked out. Anyways, fun. So yeah, I definitely will have some more hockey games in my future, especially if they're free.
Yeah.
It was free.
It's so awesome.
Just free. And it felt like it was like a personal entertainment show just for me. That's what it felt like. I was like, these teams are playing for me because it was just nobody
it's
there.
It's an awesome sport. It was and cool. It's got a Razorback. Like it represents your home state. It's so cool. And they got some cool looking jerseys too. Like their sweaters are pretty awesome. So like,
I liked it. So let's talk a little bit about your reactions to the Kentucky game from your perspective.
Oh yeah.
Anything noteworthy? Anything that stood out? Anything you want to talk about?
It's a popular conversation going on right now. But it, bottom line, you got 2 weeks to prepare. You knew a receiver was going to be quarterback. Like, I don't know how you don't plan better about it. We jumped out to a 10-0, should have been 14-0 lead. And you can obviously, Kentucky made adjustments. Arkansas did not make adjustments. And so that was the rest of it. Arkansas could not get anything going. And I understand Ben Hicks was able to move the ball a little bit. Neither quarterback's the answer right now. So
they
both stink.
Yeah, one I feel like Starkle, he gets the ball out fast. It's like, but he has it predetermined where he's going with the ball. It seems like he never, he very rarely, at least from what I see, it seems like he locks in on a wide receiver, throws it there, whatever. Just he's going there, and who knows if it's going to be accurate or not. And then Hicks is the opposite, where it's like he can't throw a ball unless he looks at three different receivers beforehand. It's like he's got to spend at least 4 seconds back there dancing around in the pocket. And we don't have an offensive line that can sustain that at all, so he's going to have to scramble a little bit and take sacks.
He's not super fast.
No, he's kind of, the plays that he can kind of escape a little bit, and, normally those will be at least first down type of plays. But ultimately, neither guy feels like is going to move the offense efficiently right now. I do feel like Starkle has the best chance if he is on to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't feel like either guy, I have confidence that either will be on. So
we actually kind of need a blend of the two. Like they both have their good qualities. So it's
true.
Starkle, can you think through it a little bit more when you throw the ball? And Ben, can you just like not triple check every time you throw the ball?
I wonder what would happen if we let Starkle, do the middle of the field stuff, like basically, from our own 20 all the way to like the red zone or, maybe 30, 40, pull him and then let Ben Hicks do red zone offense. I don't know if the statistics would say that that's a good strategy, but it just seems like Nick Starkle turns the ball over a lot in the red zone. So I would be game for like something. Let's just try it. Why not?
Yeah, I'm good with that. It's overly frustrated. I looked at the first, how many games has Chad had now as coach? We had 18 games now. I looked at did you see this comparison of Bielema versus Morris's first 18 games?
Yes.
And it was like incredibly similar.
Yes.
But Morris was slightly worse.
Yes. Yes. I actually recorded a little bit before this that exact same thing.
Spoiler alert.
Or kind, it's kind of like a callback at this point because when people hear this, this will be after it.
Oh, I'm getting bumped in the rotation.
Yeah, you're bumped after. I guess. Yeah, probably. You'll be after.
Oh, yeah. It was bad. It's not good. It's not. I'm not encouraged whatsoever on anything. So I don't want to be a downer. There's no point in just being super negative about it. Everyone else is. I get it. I just want to have something to give me hope.
Yeah, so. It's just bad. There's literally nothing to be I'm pretty much an eternal optimist for a lot of things. And today I was watching a interview with Treylon Burks, and it just hit me. I was like, of this team, maybe the whole team, but I'm just going to focus on offense. The leaders of our offense are two 18 or 19-year-old kids. And it's Trey Knox and Treylon Burks. They're the leaders for some reason. I don't think Rakeem Boyd is like a leader or leading. None of our quarterbacks have proven that they can. It's like the identity of our offense is embodied in two freshman wide receiver right now, which obviously doesn't bode well now, but give those guys a few years and it will probably bode really well for us then. Huh? Those guys are stud guys, but it's a weird transition phase right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not making excuses. It's like, no, we should be so much better than we are, but we just aren't, and it's frustrating.
I'll say this. This is obviously unpopular and will be received with, like, you're an idiot, but I feel like whenever I've hit rock bottom as a Razorback fan, what I mean, which I found, like, a new rock bottom, I feel like, here lately, but that's always when they kind of surprise us a little bit. And it's like, I'm not just saying, oh, we hung with A&M, that's great, or when we lost by 4 to Kentucky. I'm talking like beat a team that you're not supposed to, like with Bielema, when he got that first SEC win against LSU.
Shut him out.
That was awesome. Should not have won that game. But like whenever we get down to the point, we know they have the talent, the coaching pedigree, obviously we're trying to figure out if that's there. But at the same time, like these guys are talented. Like, you know, are they going to beat Auburn? You know, no. They shouldn't at all. But, like, that's whenever everyone gets surprised. And then what happens? It's like a cycle. It's like, well, Arkansas is not ever going to win a game again. And then say we, like, beat a team like Auburn or something just completely makes zero sense. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, yeah, we're going to win a national championship. You know, it's like this overreaction on both sides. Not to say we're overreacting at this point because it's well-deserved. But I don't know.
It is comical how many bad things happened with that Kentucky game, though.
Yeah.
At this point, you just have to shake your head. You know, multiple players leaving, our top-rated recruit decommitting. Obviously, we lost the game. You know, there's all kinds of statistics. Like, it's just shoveling bad. Like, I talked about this earlier, but there's another person that tweeted out, there's 4 teams in all of, I can't remember if it was Power 5 or just FBS teams that haven't played a team with a current winning record, and we're one of the 4 teams. That's how bad our schedule has been. Like, and we've only won 2 of those 4 games.
Oh, how do you got to feel if you're Chad Morris though right now? Like, you got to be losing some of that pep, and he's got a lot of pep in his step. He's got a lot of optimism, but man, he's got to start be second guessing himself bad right now.
Yeah, you have to. How can you not? I mean, I guarantee, you know, from a fan's perspective, we don't know anything of what's going on in there, but you know that it's ugly in there. You know, it's not.
Oh yeah.
They're not, it's not sweet. Like these coaches, I guarantee it's pretty bad, but they're probably keeping it together. And I think they're all actually good people. You know, I think that they're all nice guys and like believe in being positive and encouraging and stuff like that. But at the same time, when things are going this bad and there's so much pressure on you and literally like, think about this, this kind of hit me. Like, imagine if you, Chad Graham, like, became a public figure. You know, of course you're always going to have people that like your name, don't like you, but right now you probably would have a 2% approval rating, maybe less. You have so many people that have like when they hear the name Chad Graham, they think loser, they don't like you, they hate you, all of this stuff. And think about living with that. Like knowing that there are so many people against you right now. And you've kind of gotten yourself into a position that you've dragged your name through the mud. We don't think about that, but there's no way that you can be that self-confident and just say, I don't care. Yeah, you all think I'm terrible. I know I'm not terrible. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. I would like not go outside, you know?
Yeah, like it's gotta, obviously coaches, you have to have a big ego, but it's gotta be worn. Like, I like people. I don't like when people don't like me. So it's like, it's easy to like call for a head coach's job. I'm like, fire him. This guy's got, I know he makes a lot of money. He's supposed to live up to it, but I don't know.
And it's like, this is impactful for his whole career. You know, I know he's probably at basically his dream position, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, he's at his pinnacle. So, you know, there's nowhere to go but down from a pinnacle to begin with. But still, it's like, there's so many high stakes associated with it that, you know, if he gets fired, it's like he's not going to get another decent job. He's probably going to go back to coaching high school, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you can get a coordinator. Can't really tout this offense.
He could probably get a coordinator position if he wanted to suck it up, you know? That's probably true, but.
Did you see the whole Bielema, Michael Bennett issue going on here?
I just saw some headlines about it. I didn't read into it or know more specifically, but just apparently the player is suspended.
Some said Bielema beef is what I saw.
Bielema beef. Yeah. Yeah. He can't go anywhere without ruffling feathers. Yeah, I imagine he's like all talk, no game, you know, like he would be like, "Oh, I'm going to punch you right in the face," and then would let you punch him first so that way he could fall down and like play the victim, you know? That is totally Brett Bielema in my mind.
Absolutely.
Get just the gamemanship of him, but
hey, he's got a Super Bowl ring.
Good for him. Good for him.
Good for Bert.
So yeah, I don't know if there's much else to say about the Kentucky game. Pretty forgettable. You know, the atmosphere was fine. The Kentucky fans were really nice. Probably about as nice as it gets. Much nicer than Vanderbilt fans. I don't like Vanderbilt fans. They are jerks.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Kentucky fans are great. So,
how many basketball conversations did you have?
A few, but. Mm-hmm. I actually talked to a lot of the fans around, and they were like talking to me during the game and just talking about lighthearted stuff. It was very not intense. It was very lighthearted, just like, yeah, we're all cool here. Like, we're just having fun. One thing I will say this, I don't think I've ever seen a crowd of people more, what's the word? Quick to call a horse collar tackle than that crowd. I'm telling you, there were so many times in that game that the crowd just erupted with like horse collar. And it was like, no, they didn't even call it one time, I don't think. But they are so sensitive to horse collar tackles. And I can only imagine if you get like a couple QBs knocked out with that. But I'm telling you, it was hilarious watching the crowd react to that specific point. They got vicious with horse collar tackles, let me tell you. But that was it. Other than that, they're cool.
that's also a thing with fan bases in the stands that have always amazed me is just the outrage on certain calls and their favorite things to – it's like in basketball, they love the flagrant foul. Like they want the flagrant foul, you know.
Yes.
They give the sign, give me the flagrant foul. They'll throw a charge up there. Horse collar, that's funny. That's a passionate one.
Yes.
We get roughing the passer. I like those. Like late hits. That's an outrage one.
Pass interference, of course, is like literally every play. Oh, that's offensive pass interference. That's defensive pass interference. It's all so obvious. That drives me crazy.
Three in the lane in basketball.
Yeah.
People love yelling that one out. Camped out there all night, ref. The best. Does that ever work? Like, does fan interaction with referees ever work? I ref TV basketball for extended time in college. And I'll say this, the more that people yelled out about stuff, and I saw it too, but like, it made me do it the other way.
Yeah.
So I don't think it helps.
No. But. I'm with you. I don't comment too much on it, other than there are those times that something seems so egregious to you from your angle, you know, and it's all about your viewing angle, to be honest. Everything is deceiving. It depends on the angle. And when you see one of those that's like, oh, I know that was a penalty, but the ref at a different angle couldn't see it. That's when I get a little hot, you know, a little heated, but whatever. When you're up close and personal with the sport, like basketball, you're most likely, well, some people aren't close, but like football, nobody's close. Nobody's even close at all to the play. Like the refs are so much closer. Like trust what they see. But like in basketball, you know, or hockey where you're kind of close to the rink, you can kind of see some things. But
I haven't seen an outrage over horse collar before. You didn't really see many horse collar flags.
That's Kentucky, awesome. Maybe it's like the horse, Kentucky horse thing. They just like own it. I don't know, but I'm telling you, it was hilarious. There were, in their opinion, there were at least four horse collars in that Arkansas game.
We need to look it up, do some research. What injuries have they seen from a horse collar? And maybe they're like, something's just sticking out.
It's got to be bad. All right. Well, Chad, we've got a football game coming up this Saturday. Auburn. 11 Central.
Early morning.
kickoff. I want you to give a bold prediction. And you know, if it's bold to you and not bold to me, hey, that's okay. We'll just say you give a bold prediction, I'm going to give a bold prediction, and we'll go.
Yeah. This is going to sound stupid.
It's fine.
Arkansas will be within 7 points in the fourth quarter.
Wow. Okay.
Bold prediction. Tommy.
That is bold. I'm going.
Still lose.
I'm going opposite. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going. So the point spread, I think right now it's -18 or something like that. I'm going double it. Double it. And that will be the score. So if it's -18, we lose by more than 36. That's how confident I feel in us. Like, that's how much I would bet it if I were a betting person. Double the line. If it's -20, I would go -40. I don't care what it is. If it goes to -30, I would go -60. I honestly believe that.
Have you ever gambled on a football game?
No.
No. I haven't either. I don't even know how you do that.
I would never. I would never do that. I've only gambled one time.
I don't believe that.
One time, and I went to West Memphis Dog Tracks.
Yeah.
And here was my strategy. I took $20 in and I said, hey, it's like cost of admission.
Yeah.
If I lose it, great. If I win some money, great. We'll just see how it goes. So I would do, you know, like the $1 or like small bets, like one or two, or once I did a $5 bet. I don't know. Bottom line, I did quite a few races out of all of them. Let's say I did 10. I just remember I only won once. One race did I get any money at all, and it wasn't very much. And so it was just like not fun at all for me. Lost my $20. Only once. I was terrible.
You picked the wrong and you lost money. That's a double.
I'm not. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it was fine, but not worth it. I'm not a gambler. Not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know how to. I will only make like lunch wagers on like my favorite team beating your favorite team.
Yep.
But my favorite teams aren't very good at sports, Tommy. So, yep. You know how that goes.
Yep.
But that's my bold prediction, though. We're going to be within 7 points in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
Call me crazy.
At some point in the fourth quarter, at any given point, whether it's beginning, middle, end, 7-point differential.
That's bold. I think it's bold.
I think that's bold. It sounds bold to me compared to what I'm thinking.
Which, that's kind of crazy that that's our bold prediction, that we'll be within 7 points to a conference opponent.
Yeah, but it's probably pretty crazy that you think that's bold, and I think it's, and I don't even think it's that bold to go that negative the other way. I really don't. I think we're going to get absolutely slaughtered.
Typically, these roles are reversed, Tommy, and like, we're kind of switching chairs here.
It is true. I just think Bo Nix is going to have his bet. I honestly, he's got a lot more games in front of him. I don't know what his best game has been. I don't know what his best game will be, obviously, but this will be one that will be one of his best games ever. My guess. I think they're coming off bye. Maybe they're not. I don't remember. I just saw some stuff for Auburn. They seem like they're ready for the challenge. They're going to just kill us.
Arkansas is going to surprise us.
And you think, hey, it would be very, very Arkansas to surprise.
Absolutely.
But
you're not going to win. Auburn could still win by 21, but it's going to be within 7 in the fourth, and then we fold.
What if both of our bold predictions somehow come true? Now, that would be completely heartbreaking. We're within 7 and to start the fourth, and then we lose by 36.
Two pick sixes.
Oh, that would be rough.
Yeah.
Well, all right, ma'am. I think that's about all I have for you today. Did you have anything for me?
You know what? We pretty much covered it. Obviously, Nolan Richardson is getting the court dedicated to him on Sunday during an exhibition game, which I get it. You want to do it the first game that's in Bud Walton, but it's a good way to get some good attendance at the exhibition game. You ever play in Little Rock, so that's pretty cool. So I'm going to be coming back from out of town, or I would be going to see that, because that's going to be a special moment. So let's get basketball going. I'm excited about it. We've got some good recruits. We got a big commitment this week, and we got some more coming in and visiting. So there's a lot of buzz, man.
A lot of buzz. Chris Moore out of West Memphis. I think it's West Memphis. Moses Moody, of course.
Yep.
Got a lot.
KK
Robinson, Jalen Williams, I think, something like that. He's tall. He's the guy you want. That's the guy I really want. But yeah, we've got like four studs just sitting in our backyard, and we don't have enough scholarships for them. That's the weird thing. I don't think. Maybe Musselman can make it work. I don't know, but.
But the thing about him, he's not afraid to boot somebody out.
He'll boot them, man. There's some
Justice
people,
Hill.
Yep. I think he'll. I agree. I'm with you, and I think he'll make people move on and take their scholarships. And I think he just runs it like professional, you know, talent in, talent out. Just if you can win, if you're going to be a piece that helps, you can be on the team. If you aren't helping, then you're not. I don't want you. I think that's his motto. If you're not a freshman that's helping, you shouldn't be on. You shouldn't be wasting a scholarship. He'd rather spend it on somebody that's a bench player that could get him, that could win him a game.
I'm excited about it.
Certainly it's not Jonathan Holmes.
Hey, Johnny Holmes, shout out if you're listening. No hard feelings. He'll find out. He'll have a great job at UPS one day.
That's right.
Something like that.
He might get him. He might even join Manny Watkins, right?
Oh yeah.
They seem cut from a similar cloth.
That's true.
Respectable young gentleman.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I'm excited about basketball. They're gonna lose some games not supposed to this year.
Yep.
And I'm okay with that. So I'm excited. So hopefully, I told you earlier, dislocated my shoulder in my sleep last weekend.
I wanted to talk about that. I totally forgot.
Oh my goodness. Third time it's come out of socket. What's happening? I'm afraid to sleep now. So
what caused the first two? Can you do it quickly?
Yeah, first one's kind of funny. I mean, I was lifting weights, doing the military press, dumbbells. So got a little bit behind me, slipped right out. So that one was most painful. The doctor actually had to put that one back in. He had to put me under. He knocked me out to put it back in. Don't know why.
Ooh.
Second time I was playing basketball, went for a rebound, little contact, came out. I put that one back in. Third time, sleeping. I sleep with my arm under my pillow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I wake up, I thought I'm dreaming, and my shoulder is out of socket.
I had to
pop it back in.
What did it, I mean, was it like immediate pain when you woke up? Was your arm like numb? Yeah. Could you feel anything in your arm, or was it?
Yeah, you can feel it. It just feels like it sounds. It's literally just feels like it's out of socket. It just feels like it's out of place. And so your ligaments are stretched and those are sore too. And so it's just pain until you pop it back in. And so luckily I found out that you raise your arm up when it's popped out. And so mine slips under, most of them do. So you raise your arm up and then reach your other shoulder blade and then it'll pop back in. And it's really painful to do. So you reach and try to grab your opposite shoulder blade and it'll go back in.
No, that just sounds awful.
Look at my range of motion. That was like 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah. Maybe. It's about to pop out again. You better be careful. If that's
like Sheriff Woody in Toy Story.
If that's how it pops in, that's probably how it pops out too, right? Is that how it works? You better be careful, man.
I have no idea. Should not happen in my sleep.
Yeah. No injuries should ever occur while sleeping. Ever. That's an intent. And I sleep similar to that. Sometimes I'll have my, you know, I'll wake up and my arm will just be totally dead. And then it's like, can you relate? And then you'll like want to roll over. And then you're like, I hope that I don't somehow
Pick up your arm.
Yeah. I hope I don't lay back on my arm in such a way that I actually break my arm because I wouldn't even feel it right now. It's like, it's totally, and I always feel like I'm going to like move it in some way that causes serious injury. But luckily, it's just numb. Isn't it so weird how your body does that? Like, man, that's weird.
It is weird.
Ugh. All right. Well, let's end on that.
All right. Woo pig, Tom.
Woo pig.
And y'all know by now that I can't let y'all out of here without talking a little bit about Razorback hockey, a team that actually is good and can get us a little bit excited here. So over the weekend, Arkansas beat Missouri State, their biggest rival, I believe 7-1 back-to-back nights, Friday and Saturday. Saturday wasn't night, but congratulations, Razorback hockey. Keep it up. Y'all are doing awesome. We love you. Sugasawara's doing amazing. Cristobal, love you. Connor McAtee, keep it up. Just to kind of help myself understand more about the history there of the Razorback program, I'll share just a little bit, and I'll probably trickle out information, you know, with more shows later on and later on. Maybe I'll do a whole segment at some point, but for those that don't know, I think one reason that we are having such a very successful season this year is that in the previous, I believe, four seasons, we've had both a Division I and a Division III team. And the Division I team, when it began, I believe in 2015, actually had a lot of success and kind of had historical success for teams that had entered into a division or started a Division I team. I think they won a lot of games, had a winning record, and did really well, and it was pretty historic. But after that, you know, weren't finding the success, had some tough seasons, and I think eventually decided, hey, let's consolidate our Division I, Division III teams down to Division III and just have some fun, win some games, and hey, maybe get to a national championship at a lower division level. And hey, you know what? I'm cool with it. I'm sure that there's way more to it than just simply that. Maybe, but maybe not. I don't know. But I think that that's one reason why we're finding success is we had players that kind of were playing in Division I against better talent for a long time. And just, you know, when you drop down a few division levels, you kind of dominate. So we're seeing that, and it's fun to win. And ultimately, you know, I don't know the incentives of having a Division I team versus a Division III or all that goes into that, but I'm on board for watching anything with a Razorback on it win games. So I'm having a lot of fun watching them when they post on their Facebook live feeds and have the games broadcast. So y'all should tune into and support them. Well, now that's everything I have for today. As always, y'all can follow the podcast on Twitter at @humble_podcast. You can also follow it on Instagram at @HardToBeHumblePodcast. You can leave any questions, comments, ideas, reactions, stories, poems, essays, whatever you want. You can leave it on the voicemail message as well. There's probably a limit. It's probably like 3 or 4 minutes, so maybe not an essay, but at least a poem you could probably fit in there. Again, that number is 615-392-0107. I'd love to hear from you, just like Andy from Memphis knows and utilizes. Love you, Andy. And finally, as is tradition, I'm going to leave one final message for all you amazing Razorback fans out there who are still listening to podcasts, even in the midst of this deep depths of darkness. As Mac Davis taught us so long ago, it can be really hard to be humble, especially when you're an Arkansas Razorback fan. Thank y'all. Y'all have a great week. And let's hope to have some fun against Auburn.